At the risk of annoying you enormously, I want to talk to you now about what you eat. I know it seems like every second person wants to give you some advice on what you should and should not be consuming. I mean, one minute fat is bad, but carbs are good. Another minute meat is out, but fruit is in. The next salt is the enemy, but sugar is okay. Or is it the other way around? I've actually lost track of all of it. But Dr. Peter Bruckner is one of the world's leading sports clinicians and researchers. A former team doctor for the Liverpool Football Club, the Socceroos, the Australian men's cricket team, Melbourne and Collingwood footy clubs. He knows how to get the best performance from a human body. The thing is, a little while ago he realised that his own body was perhaps not travelling that well. His research led him to the realisation that we've been going about this nutrition thing all wrong. And the results on his own life and that of many of his clients have been dramatic. Hello, Brookie. How nice to see you.
Great to be here, Lindy.
Welcome back to the studio.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Let's talk a little bit about where you found yourself, because I've known you for a long time. And I know that you're a man who, you're a bit of a dismisser of fads of any sort, kind of alternative something or other. You want the science, you want the real stuff, and you want it to work. So tell us the story about how you got here.
Yeah, you're right. I'm a skeptic, a healthy skeptic, I'd like to say. Yeah, it was about 6 years ago. I was living and working in Liverpool, England, and I was, you know, ostensibly healthy, but in reality, I was overweight, bordering obese. I'd probably put on half a kilogram a year for 30 years, so I was probably 15 kilograms overweight. And I had a family history of type 2 diabetes. My father had developed type 2 diabetes at 60, which was the age that I was at, and I was pretty determined I didn't want to go down that track because I saw what it did to him. But I sort of thought I was healthy, but, you know, my kids are starting to poke me in the guts and say, you know, come on, Dad, you're getting a bit bit tubby, you know. And I'd shrug my shoulders and say, well, hang on a minute, you know, I'm on a low-fat diet, low-fat this, low-fat that. I do regular exercise. Despite all that, I was putting on weight. And the reality was when I had my blood test done that I wasn't as healthy as I thought. I had high triglyceride levels, I had high insulin levels, and I had a condition called fatty liver where you get fatty infiltrates in your liver. And I'd actually had it for 10 years and completely ignored it because I didn't really understand what it meant, and I figured I was on a low-fat diet and I just ignored it. So that's a bit embarrassing. But I wasn't that healthy. And a colleague of mine, a very eminent sports scientist in South Africa, sort of came out, you know, not in the way people come out these days, but came out as an anti-carber. And he'd always been a big proponent of carbs. He was a sports scientist. And he sort of said, no, we're wrong. And he's a very, very smart guy. And it really sort of made me think, oh, boy, that's, you know, he's either completely, you know, gone bonkers or there's something in this. Yeah. So I thought, no, I guess I had enough respect for him to sort of say, okay, I'm going to look into this. So I read a book by a New York Times journalist called Gary Taubes called Good Calories, Bad Calories. And this book just blew me away. It changed my life. It sort of talked about not only whether, you know, carbs or fats were the way to go, but it talked about the sort of the history and the politics of how it all happened. So 40 years ago, there were sort of two schools of thought. There was the people who thought sugar was the evil and the people who thought fat was the evil. The sugar guy was a guy called John Yudkin, who wrote a great book called Pure, White and Deadly, Sugar. He was in England, and there was a guy called Ansel Keys, who was the sort of the fat man, if you like, in the US. And Keys won, and the low-fat sort of movement won out. And it won, as this book showed, it won out for reasons that had nothing to do with science. There was no science to back it up. It had everything to do with sort of power and politics.
Lobbying.
And money and U.S. agriculture and so on. And it was actually the U.S. Department of Agriculture that drew up the first dietary guidelines.
Wow.
And totally ignored the recommendations from the dietitians and just ramped up the amount of you know, cereals and grains and everything like that. Well, what a surprise, you know. And this book was really disturbing. I mean, I remember putting it down each night and saying, no, this couldn't be right. You know, we couldn't have got something as basic as this. You know, the whole Western world has been on a low-fat obsession, you know, and cholesterol obsession for 40 years. And here I was, you know, this guy producing all this evidence that it was – well, there was no evidence. And And subsequent to that, well-known British researcher, Zoe Harcum, has gone back and looked at all the available scientific evidence at that time and found nothing.
Wow.
Nothing at all. So yeah. This was all based on politics, really, and money. And that just blew me away. I mean, I found it quite disturbing, really. And so then I delved into, you know, books and magazines and articles and research papers, and I just, you know, got obsessed about it all. And then I decided, well, it was time for some research, you know. So, now, any good scientist, Linda, you're a scientist, you would know that a research with an N equals one is a waste of time, except when the one is you.
Yes.
And in which case it becomes very important. So I put myself on an experiment. For 3 months I went low carb. So what does that mean? I stopped eating bread, rice, pasta, cereals, potatoes, fruit juice, anything with sugar in it. I basically stopped eating processed foods and went back to eating the way our grandparents, you know, used to eat, you know, sort of eggs and bacon.
So and, proteins and fats.
Full fat, you know, instead of the low fat everything, it was just full fat, you know, cream and milk and butter, back to butter instead of margarine and that sort of stuff. And I did all my bloods at the start of it. And then I went on that for 13 weeks, 3 months. 13 weeks, I lost 13 kilograms. Easy as you like. I was never hungry.
Sorry, no one can see my face, but it's believe me, it's 13 a bit weeks, of incredulity 13, there.
And the weight just fell off.
So you lost a kilo a week.
Kilo a week. You know, I lost, you know, the first week you think you lose a kilo. Oh, yeah, that's all right.
That's what
a bit of water and that sort of stuff. You know, and then every week I lost a kilo. It was unbelievable. And I felt fantastic.
Did you stabilise it at the end, though?
At the end, well, you know, my family started, you know, telling me, instead of poking me in the gut, they started saying, oh, you're looking a bit thin. So I dropped back a little bit. I went, you know, sort of hardcore for that 3 months. And then I just eased back a little bit and had a few more carbs, a few more veggies, a little bit of fruit sometimes and so on, and stabilised my weight. So ever since then, I've been pretty much stable at that that lower weight. And the interesting thing is, the first thing you notice is that you're not hungry anymore. You know, I used to be constantly hungry. You'd have your cereal for breakfast, and then 2 hours later, you'd be looking at your watch saying, God, is it lunchtime yet? You know, and you'd be always hungry and always eating. And all of a sudden, I wasn't hungry.
What is that? Why does that happen scientifically? What does it do?
Well, when you have carbs, you get this sort of release of insulin, and that sort of shoots the sugar into your bloodstream and into your muscles, and then you get a sort of a rebound effect, you know, of lowered sugar. So you go from high to low. And then that's when you feel hungry again. And then, therefore, there's this constant sort of every 2 or 3 hours you have to sort of replenish your low blood sugar, and it goes high and you get that sort of surge and then down again. So whereas when you have a low carb and a sort of lots of good healthy fats and protein, your blood sugar level stays constant the whole time. And so you're not hungry. So I now eat twice a day, sometimes once a day. I'm just never hungry. And,
it's a few texts. Can I get to some? Yeah. Did you drink alcohol, Peter, says a text.
Oh, gosh.
Immediately someone's jumped there, and I don't blame them.
No, I had a glass or two of red wine on an occasional basis. There's very few carbs in red wine and dry white wine. Spirits are okay. It's more the mixers that are the problems and beer. Yeah, but there are now low-carb beers around. There's even a no-carb beer around from Queensland. So, you know, there are ways around all. So the little tricks you can do. So if you like rice, you can have cauliflower rice. You know, if you like pasta, you can have zucchini noodles and so on. So, you know, you really don't have to change very much. And people think it's a hardship. I mean, I ate really well. I mean, you know, I still do. I mean, I love my food and enjoy my food, and it's a pleasure to eat. It's not difficult at all.
What were your blood tests like at the end of that 13 weeks?
Well, they've completely gone back to normal. So this fatty liver that I'd had for 10 years, so that had it's fatty liver is a common disease that most people don't realise they have. A third of Australians have a fatty liver, and it's fatty infiltrates in your liver that are basically sort of sugar or fructose in particular. Anyway, it completely resolved in that 13 weeks. I'd had it for 10 years. Every blood test I'd had I'd had blood tests every 2 years probably for 10 years. Every one of them had been quite high in this particular enzyme that shows up in fatty liver, and it went completely back to normal.
Were you shocked by that?
Well, I'd sort of, from my reading, I'd sort of thought maybe this might happen. But yeah, look, it did blow me away. It sort of reinforced everything that I'd read. And so as a result, you know, I guess I've become a, you know, an advocate.
You totally have. And you've written a book about it called A Fat Lot of Good, which I've been going through over the last few days. And knowing we were going to have this conversation and knowing you would expect nothing less of me, I started to give it a go because I just wanted to see, did I get hungry? How did it feel to eat these foods? So I've been having things like, you know, I had bacon, eggs, mm-hmm. some avocado for breakfast.
Great.
It was delicious. Some roast chicken and some salad and some vegetables, but not potato and not sweet potato, which I always think, you know, if you're going to have roast vegetables, you've got to have at least one of those. But, of course, you don't have to have that.
Well, sweet potato is not too bad. Yeah. Again, it depends on how strict you are, you know, and everyone has sort of – I'm not saying that everyone has to be super, super strict. It really depends on your health, really. And it depends on a thing called insulin resistance. And that's the key to your sort of health, really, and how insulin resistant you are. And generally, young people are not, you know, they're pretty insulin sensitive. They tolerate carbohydrates pretty well.
Yes. It's the reason why that we tend not to gain as much weight when we're younger.
Exactly. And then as you get older, you become less and less tolerant of carbohydrates. So you get insulin resistant. You need to produce more and more insulin, and insulin makes you fat, basically. So
there's a text from Harry, who'll feel better about this, saying, but what about fresh potato? I'm a potato grower, Brookie. What am I going to do? You don't want people to eat my produce.
No, look, I'm not saying no carbohydrates, but, you know, in particular, I'm really big on reducing processed food.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, processed food is, most of it is pretty horrible stuff. It's full of sugar and vegetable oils and grains, and really, you know, if there's a single message that I would give is, you know, eat real food.
You made a point of this too, about the whole idea of this whole low-fat business as well. If something says low-fat, the chances are it's full of sugar.
That's right. Well, you know, we told the food industry to take the fat out.
Yeah.
You know, it's our fault, you know. And the food industry responded. They did. They realised, oh, it's a bit of a problem here. We take all the flavour out. So what do? They replaced it with sugar. Now, you know, that's been a disaster, but I mean, that's not their fault in a way. And they've just ramped up the sugar and sugar and sugar, and there's more sugar. So we've really become sort of addicted to that sort of sweet taste and of sugar. And it's amazing after a sort of a, you know, you'll find this after, you know, by next week, you'll have something sweet and it'll go,
it'll push into me. Jared was talking about, by text, he wants to know about what you think the long-term effect of a very low carb diet is. I mean, you've been doing, what did you say, 6 years?
Six years?
So what, but you know, you add bits in. I think you said to me once, if you want to have the creme brulee when you're out, have the creme brulee.
Yeah. Look, you know, as I said, look, if I was diabetic and you know, I was grossly overweight or I had, you know, some metabolic disease and so on, yeah, I'd be strict the whole time. But you know, for people who are ostensibly healthy, you know, you just reduce your carbs. You don't have to eliminate your carbs altogether. And you know, but something like that should be a treat rather than sort of being standard
norm
every day that you have and so on. So, you know, and especially with kids, you know, it's so important, you know, that, I mean, more than a quarter of Australia's kids are overweight and obese. You know, that's scary.
It's horrifying.
And we know that overweight, obese kids become obese adults, you know. So we've got to tackle it there, and we've got to cut back on soft drinks and fruit juices.
Oh, God, the fruit juice and the soft drink stuff.
Well, fruit juice, to be fair, we've always thought it was healthy, you know. And, in fact, you know, they take most of the good stuff out of the fruit and you're left with the sugar and so on. So,
some texts. One that says, what about vegetarians, Brookie? I'm worried about my sugar levels. So would fruit be okay in that situation?
Yeah, but you don't have to worry about your sugar levels. You know, your sugar levels will look after themselves. You don't need sugar and you don't need carbohydrates. There's three nutrients: fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. The only ones that we can survive without is carbohydrates. We don't need them. We can't survive without fats. We can't survive without proteins. We can survive without carbohydrates. So it's not, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, your brain's not getting enough glucose and so on. Your brain manages fine on ketones and on fat. So it's not an issue. But vegetarians, it's slightly more challenging, but it's not difficult to be low-carb and vegetarian.
Dom says, I've been doing this type of diet for 3 to 4 years. Never hungry, and my arthritis pain in my index fingers has virtually disappeared. I'm very good. I'm very happy with the results. There's a text that says, it sounds like Brookie is talking about a paleo diet. Far from it. Far from a paleo diet.
It's got some similarities to paleo in that it's sort of more natural food and so on. But paleos don't like dairy, and I'm a big dairy fan. I love as long as you can tolerate dairy, as most of us can, I think dairy's terrific. But interesting, just going back to the comment about the arthritis so on. I mean, we've had some dramatic cases of people with arthritis, because arthritis is inflammation, okay? And it seems now that inflammation is thought to be the cause of a lot of chronic disease, even cardiovascular disease. You know, it's not so much cholesterol anymore, it's inflammation. And we know that poor diet, sugar and vegetable oils causes inflammation. And if you cut that back, it's amazing the difference. We've had people who are on the sort of waiting list for hip surgery for their arthritis and so on, who changed their diet and no longer need the operation and so on. So if you've got an inflammatory condition, as many of us have, I mean, I had an Achilles problem that I'd had for years. And I remember about 6 weeks into this diet thinking,
that's not so bad.
I haven't felt my Achilles for a while.
A byproduct.
And touched it, and you're normally super tender and so on, and completely haven't felt it since. So, you know, arthritis is an inflammatory disease, and this is really an anti-inflammatory diet.
A text that says, would you recommend this though for some 16-year-old fit rugby union player?
Absolutely. You know, the interesting thing is that so many seemingly fit athletes, even elite athletes, are a little bit overweight. You know, despite all the amount of training they do, you know, a number of the cricketers, when I first, you know, got onto this, they were quite interested and got into it, and they all lost sort of, you know, 3 or 4 kilograms and felt so much better for it. So you do, you know, you don't lose muscle, because you've got plenty of protein in this diet. So you don't lose muscle, you lose fat. So your power-to-weight ratio improves.
Yes.
So for a sports people.
I've seen some of the evidence of just looking at some of those players. Shane Watson immediately springs to mind, who actually writes a foreword in this book, which is lovely of him.
Yeah.
We're running out of time because we have to go to Canberra for the budget reply. But there's a lot of text. I just want to go to one because I think it's important. Can Brookie just talk about a couple of meals he regularly eats? And we do have some recipes in the book as well, but I think that's important to show people, look, this is the sort of stuff you can eat on this diet.
Okay. So very quickly, breakfast, I'll either have eggs and bacon and salmon and avocado and mushrooms and any of those sorts of things. Or I'll have a full-fat Greek yogurt with some nuts and seeds and some berries. For evening meal, I'll have pretty much anything. I mean, meat, fish, zoodle, pasta. I'll have lots of green veggies, cauliflower, etc. And if I want dessert, I'll have berries and full-fat cream.
Which I had today, which was delicious, by the way. And my comment was going to be to you, I think I said this to you off air, that I have eaten like this the last couple of days, last 3 days, and I'm not hungry. But I also don't have that feeling of fullness. You know, that
bloating,
maybe I didn't realize it was bloating.
Yeah.
But that kind of is what it feels like.
It's amazing
weird.
How many people who don't tell you about their abdominal discomfort and bloating, and then when they go on this diet, they say, oh, by the way, I've always had this horrible sort of bloating
kind of
and uncomfortable feeling, and it's gone.
Lots of questions coming through. All I can say is go to the book. It's called A Fat Lot of Good, How the Experts Got Food and Diet So Wrong and What You Can Do to Take Back Control of Your Health. And quickly, the name of the book that really kicked this off for you again?
Good Calories, Bad Calories by Gary Taubes. And the other one is The Big Fat Surprise by Nina Tyshultz. But they're pretty heavy sort of going. This is much more basic stuff for the public.
Can we say consumable? Thank you, Brookie. Nice to see you.
Great
busy
to see
person
you,
that you are. Dr. Peter Bruckner, OAM. His book is called A Fat Lot of Good.